Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is artist, cartoonist, and illustrator, Zeke Pena. Zeke, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to talk to you again.
Hey, Mark, thank you so much for having me.
I want to congratulate you on winning two awards so far this year. You've won other awards, but you've won two awards this year, and I want to talk about both of them because both of them are pretty prestigious awards. You got the Pura Belpre Illustrator Honor Award?
Yes, yeah, I was really excited about that one.
That's huge. Talk to me about what that is.
Yeah, so that's an award that comes from a committee that is usually organized around American Librarian Association.
Because she was the first Latino librarian in New York City, right?
In New York City, yeah. So it's a pretty cool honor that they have going. I mean, it's an excellent list of books that I'm honored to be on. And yeah, they're basically just kind of trying to follow in Pura's footsteps in terms of bringing, you know, literature by people of Latinx descent,
nice,
Spanish-speaking
nice.
Folks, also to, you know, young readers. So I was really excited to get that honor.
And that's for My Papi Has a Motorcycle?
Yes, so that's for My Papi Has a Motorcycle, which was published by Coquila Penguin Young Readers and written by Isabel Quintero.
And we talked to Isabel before, and hopefully we'll be talking to her again. In between time, she's given birth. You also right. got the Tomas Rivera Mexican-American Children's Book Award.
Yeah, so that, you know, again.
So how does it, wait a minute, how does it feel raking in the awards, man? It's like, do you have a trophy shelf and stuff?
You know, I've just started here in this new office space, this work-from-home office space, just started putting some stuff up on the walls. It's pretty exciting. Yeah, I
mean, it is exciting.
The Pura Belpre Award that's sitting next to my little bulletin board, and then I have another, the Ezra Jack Keats Award, and then we have yet to receive the actual, you know, mail that has the award for the Tomas Rivera, which I'm also excited about. But I mean, it's kind of crazy. I mean, I'm, you know, it's my first children's book, so I just kind of didn't know what to expect. But I think that, you know, in working on it, there was, you know, and obviously I was nervous about, you know, coming into that space, but I was also very comfortable in that, you know, I still read children's books, whether right. it's reading it to a niece or a nephew. But also just for myself, it's something that I pay attention to because it was pretty critical to my, you know, upbringing with, you know, having an educator as a mom.
you better do it right.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so I think that's kind of the exciting part is that, you know, I remember going to my mom was a teacher, started out as a teacher, then kind of worked her way up to assistant principal.
Whoa.
And she eventually became a superintendent of a small district in New Mexico.
Were you still a kid when she was a superintendent?
I was not, actually. I was an adult by then.
Okay, thank God, because can you imagine being a teenager and having your parent be a superintendent of the schools? Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, no way. And it's interesting, I never had, I don't know if it's a privilege. Yeah, it's kind of a double-edged sword, right? Like, so I never went to the schools that my mom was a principal at or a teacher or a superintendent for. So, yeah, I kind of dodged that, I guess. But what I do remember was going into work with her on the weekends as a principal. You know, educators of all, you know, teachers and principals are putting a lot of their own personal time into their work. And so I would go with my mom to the libraries, to the school. And at the schools were empty. So she was pretty much the only one there with the exception of a few other people. But I was able to go into like empty libraries. She would unlock the doors. You know,
wow.
I had the rules and stuff, you know, don't, you know, pull stuff out, make sure you put stuff back where you got it from, and just kind of that respect for that space. So I think that was a big part of just like me learning about that format, right, of children's books. So in working on My Papi Has a Motorcycle, it was, a process I feel like I've been working on my whole life.
That's really interesting because before that, you've done young adult, like, illustrations work. But for people who aren't familiar with that, there's a tremendous gulf between young adult work and children's work. Do you want to talk about that? I mean, you have to be sensitive to a lot of things.
Yeah, and it, you know, there is, I mean, there's a huge difference between making a book for a 7, 8, 9-year-old, even just to a, you know, 12, 13, 14-year-old, right?
Like, oh, yeah.
Even that transition from elementary school to middle school is a big one. And I think that not only that, but, you know, I think that the things that that our young people these days are exposed to are much different from my generation and from previous generations. So that's also on a sliding scale, right? Like, they have access to TikTok, they have access to YouTube. And right. So, you know, when I'm having discussions with my nephews and stuff, I'm just like, how do you know about this? What are you talking about? Like, what are you?
Oh, you sound like this old guy. You're going to kick the kids off your lawn. Hey, these kids these days with that TikTok stuff.
Get out of here with your TikTok. Yeah. No, but I mean, it was something that, you know, as I mentioned before, I read, you know, young adult literature. And there's like this big crossover right now in terms of people who are making work that is for young adults and for adults, right?
Like, right.
I think that space right. for me is where the most interesting work is happening.
One of my good friends is Jared Krasuska. And he wrote a book called Hey Kiddo, which was it's an autobiography. And it's a very rough one about him growing up with a mother who was a serious heroin addict and his father had abandoned him. And that's both for younger people and adults.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, we have, I mean, that book is amazing, you know, and I think that's the beautiful thing is that I feel like it's creating a bridge. That space of young adult to adult is creating a bridge.
Yeah.
For adults to continue to have discussions.
Oh, that's really interesting.
About their upbringing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
it's a great way to think about, you know, things that you experienced when you were in high school and middle school. And I think that for me personally, that's an important kind of piece to it, is that it allows you to kind of process things. And, you know, in the instance of Hey Kiddo, it's how are you as an adult processing these often traumatic experiences that you're experiencing right. when you were youth? And I don't think that when we're young, while we may be aware of it, I don't know that we always have the tools to deal with it and to heal from it, right? So I think that it's an excellent space to be making work in.
Well, I also think the whole genre of young adult has sort of fallen between the cracks for the last couple of decades. Yeah, I mean, you know, people did children's books and then they did adult books, and then there was always like these oddities that were called young adult books. But I think everything's changed and everybody's paying attention to that now.
Yeah.
I got to talk to you as an artist. But before we could get lost in this, okay. Whenever I talk to an artist, I'm always interested in their evolution. So I want to talk to you. Like, when did you start seriously enjoying drawing? Ever since you were a kid?
I mean, I feel like everyone has a very similar answer, and it's that, you know, I've been drawing since I was a kid. But the reality of it is that everyone draws when they're a kid, right? Like everyone that has the privilege of going to an elementary school, you know, has a crayon in their hands and they're drawing. So I think that we are all similar in that experience. And I think that we as people all share that creative process, right? And so that's...
But something nice happens to there very few people who then become artists. I guess a better question to ask you is that at what point in your life did you go, this is what I'm going to be doing?
I think that, I mean, you know, it's an ongoing process, right? Like always questioning that, which I think is healthy for my process, is always questioning, is this the right way for me to tell a story? I feel that there was a transition for me probably in my later 20s. I had been working a lot in the film industry. I mean, I've been a DJ since I was in high school, so I was gigging as a DJ.
Excellent.
You know, riding around town on my bike with records on my backpack. But,
you know, two turntables and a...
Yeah, for sure. Exactly that, you know. I mean, hip-hop culture was super important to me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I totally understand that.
Yeah.
So, but were you drawing that entire time?
I think I was. I mean, I feel like a lot of it was napkin drawing.
I think
that, you know, drawing with a ballpoint pen is something that's really comfortable for me, because in high school we would pass around either black books or notebooks, and a group of friends of mine, we would write verse, right? Like hip hop verse. And we would draw illustrations to match the verses.
Yep. So yeah, absolutely.
Kind of like this reduced form of comic book making or storytelling, right? Or illustrating for that matter. But I think that to your question about, was there a turning point?
Yeah.
I think that I tried to do the film thing for a while. I tried to pursue, I've always been interested in storytelling. I think that that comes a lot from my dad.
So you wanted to be a director?
I dabbled in it a little bit. I think that as I worked on set, I like directing, and I can be pretty good at it. I gravitated a little bit more towards the writing end of it.
Okay.
Film stuff.
That makes sense.
And then when I was actually on set, I was doing mostly gaffing and DP, so director of photography. I was doing the lighting.
But that's a cool job, because you learn a lot of technical things about film that way.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you're doing the back end. You're doing the kind of story. You're doing the visual storytelling part of it, right? Trying to figure out how to take this script.
Wow.
And these actors in front of you and the
matter of fact is that the film couldn't exist without you.
Right.
You're the guy that's keeping everything running.
And tying the story between the story and the visual. So I think that is a critical piece. But I, after doing the film stuff, I shifted and started really focusing on painting again.
Wow. But what pushed you there?
I mean, I think it was just something that I didn't feel like I quite finished pursuing with the process of painting and really learning how to paint well. So I in school, in high school, I was in AP art. I had an amazing, you know, art teacher. Shout out to Ms. Garcia. And then after that, I took two studios. I got credit because I took the AP class, and then I took two studios in college, but they were really just the fundamental things. I took design one and drawing two.
Oh, yeah.
Those were the studios that I took. And then after that, I started to pursue art history. So my degree is in art history from the University of Texas at Austin.
Whoa, hold it right there. You could probably teach art history?
Yes. That was my intention. Yeah.
I love your career. No, so I'm being genuine. Right. I think it's like, wow, what a cool thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of all over the place. But
what part of art history did you gravitate towards?
I think that both moving away from the little beautiful brown bubble that is El Paso and Juarez to Austin, and the experience of engaging with, you know, really awesome art history professors at UT was a critical experience of, you know, kind of me being able to explore my identity. So I looked a lot at Chicana and Chicano and Chicanx or Latinx work is what we would call now art history, you know, so looking at those narratives.
Wow.
And those kind of movements. Also a lot of, you know, indigenous Mexican or indigenous American storytelling and cosmologies. So those were kind of the things that I was very interested in during that time.
But all that informs your artwork now.
Yeah. You know, so back to the kind of ballpoint pen drawing stuff, is that all that time I'm taking notes in a notebook, and my way, this was before, I'm going to sound like an old man again. you know, this was before a lot of the digital stuff that we have access to now in terms of sharing digital files. So the classroom was very much, you know, traditional art history. The professor shows the slide up and you take your notes, right? So in a way of quickly trying to take my notes, I would draw the slides so that I could remember what it looked like.
Because
for me, the visual part of it is what I'm going to remember most, and that's going to help me remember the dates and the context for that actual piece.
Yep.
And so that ballpoint drawing I had to get really quick at drawing that stuff. And I think that really helps now with when I'm doing like storyboarding. Yeah.
Wow. That was a lot more complicated story than I've gotten from most other artists. in the best sort of way. And actually, I'm really jealous sort of way. I think that was the way to go. But could you see yourself not doing art anymore and then getting back into film?
I don't think so. No, I'm not interested in it. I mean,
good, because I want to see a lot more of your work.
Yeah. So a shorter route to answer your story is that it was actually very recently that I made the decision to focus only on illustration and comic book making and, you know, making comics. And that was, I would say, 4 years ago, maybe, or 5 years ago, transitioning away from painting, transitioning away from pursuing fine art, you know, projects, and really just focusing on the visual narrative, right? So that was, you know, once I made that decision, a lot of the work that I was making, I felt like it was achieving what I had been trying to achieve all along, all those years of painting and doing all the other things. So I don't think I'll turn back, but who knows?
Before we move on, give out your website so people who are listening can like immediately tune to see some of your stuff.
Yeah, definitely. So my website is zpvisual.com, setapevisual.com. And you can check out all my work there. There's also links.
Yeah, try to be looking at it while we're talking about it, because it is. You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is artist, cartoonist, illustrator, Zeke Pena. And we're talking about his work. Now, you, as a hardworking artist, and a lot of people just think artists have it easy, it's hard work. And I noticed you've really worked hard to collaborate with a lot of different people. You've done digital single covers. You've done book illustrations. When you've worked with another, with a written author, like you've worked twice with Isabel Quintero, you've worked with other authors too. Mm-hmm. How closely do you work? How does that work for you? And was that a learning curve, learning how to collaborate?
Yeah, there was, collaborating with other creative people, other storytellers, you know, I've done a lot of collaborative work in community organizing. I think that there's definitely a learning curve. Everyone has their own process of telling a story or putting together a project, you know. But I think it's something that I'm really interested in. It's something that's really important to my process, specifically with illustration and bookmaking. When there's another author, like when I'm collaborating with Isabel, it's her story. She knows the story the best, right?
Yeah.
And it makes really good sense to me to have really close contact as the illustrator to make sure that I'm, you know, first and foremost, treating her story with respect, right? And making sure that I'm not misrepresenting something. I mean, that's something that's important to me. But we definitely had to troubleshoot and figure out how to work better with each other, because in a lot of ways, if a writer, specifically a writer, they're not always thinking visually.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to get at, because they'll often make decisions that may not be the right ones visually.
Right. Yeah, and I think that that was the big learning curve, was trying to figure out where we were meeting. Because there's in comics, you know, with comics, there's a meeting place where the text slash story meets the visuals.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was a lot of where our problem solving happened in terms of our collaborative relationship. But, you know, it followed suit with a lot of the other collaboration I've been doing for a long time in the community, you know, with musicians working on album covers and things like that. It's always a collaborative thing. And I feel like, you know, a lot of it is connected to cultural things, right? I feel like that's a cultural thing that I take from my community, is that we try to work together. We communicate with each other in an effort to, you know, tell a similar story, to tell our story together.
You've done covers for things, Chicano Batman, This Land Is Your Land, They Call Me Guero by David Bowles. A lot of stuff like that. Texas Soul Music LP cover. But you've also done a lot of book work. Jaya and Raza by Sonia Patel. Isabel's Gabi, which I haven't read yet, A Girl in Pieces.
Oh, it's good.
Is it?
Really good. I highly recommend it to anyone.
Your illustrations for it look wild.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, that process was amazing when I collaborated with Isabel on that. So that was the first time we met. Shout out to Cinco Puntos Press. And
yep.
Full disclosure, I do work part-time for them as an art director. So, in an effort to be transparent in these days. Shout out to them. They put us together. It was Isabel's first published project as an author, and it was my first book project that was published. I had already published a bunch of things in the music industry, done a couple of digital comics and things, but this was the first time that I was able to, you know, go through that process with a publisher. Now, because Cinco Puntos Press, which is based in El Paso, is an independent publisher, they work kind of differently. So Isabel and I really collaborated on that. There was a lot of conversation back and forth.
Nice.
The cover image is based off of a collage that she made. I basically just kind of recreated it in illustration form. And I think that it made for a really coherent story, right?
Yeah.
So when the person reading the book, when they close that book after reading a few pages, or the whole book, you know, if you're that person, I'm not that person. But, after they close the book, the cover should reinforce the story, right?
Yeah.
The cover should allow the story that you just read to resonate. And when you come back to the book, it should do the same thing, right? It should spark those memories so that you're ready to jump back into that world. And so that was a really exciting project to work on. And, I love doing book covers.
Now you've also done some really excellent political illustrations. You ELPJRZ.
Yes.
Talk to me about that.
Yeah. I loosely title things.
Yep.
I think the one you're referring to is after the shooting in El Paso.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I tried to draw a couple things. I was a part of a fundraiser when that happened. It was, you know, it's a traumatic event for the community.
Absolutely.
And, you know, those families are still kind of dealing with that grief. And the community as a whole is still dealing with it, you know, all the while, you know, all these other things that we're dealing with in terms of the pandemic.
Yeah, oh God.
A lot of the political turmoil that we're in right now. But I think that someone posted on Twitter, a group of people, you know, in the parking lot of the Walmart. It's just where they were at was actually just behind the Walmart. And there was a young man, you know, playing a song. You know, they were singing a corrido. And it just kind of brought me to tears. And it was just something that I felt captured, something that is at once terribly sad, but also extremely uplifting,
mm-hmm.
and highlights the resilience of my community, right, in both El Paso and Juarez. And I think that a lot of the coverage that I was seeing coming out is in some respects a little bit exploitive and in disrespect of the people who are dealing with these issues.
Yep.
And I think for me, that illustration was an attempt to just to try to do something that was uplifting, you know, and show how it's a moment where the community comes together in the face of all of the turmoil that our community is already dealing with border policy, with issues around immigration, and increased border militarization, you know, and the stuff that, you know, our community has been going through for decades, right? So,
although it's been ratcheted up in the last couple of years.
Yeah, definitely. I think that there's the attention of the nation and the attention of the world is now focused on the border. But, you know, we should always note that there are people in, you know, especially in Juarez and, you know, that have been dealing with a lot of these issues for generations. And, you know, I think that it's a good thing that we're focused on these things right now. I think that it's terribly tragic that it takes a shooting for us to start to focus on them. It was just something small. I also, you know, donated the illustration so that Latino USA could use it for a story.
Nice.
I think they recently republished it or something. But yeah, you know, I also don't want that work to be transactional, especially in those instances. So it was something that, you know, I had the privilege and the time to be able to take the time to do it. And yeah, I did it with respect, you know, to those families.
Now, when I look at your whole body of work, especially your own personal work too, there are some visual themes that come up. Cactus as a symbol of the area. Is that Nepal? Yeah. Then you do a beautiful print called Nopalero.
Yeah, thank you.
And I also noticed, I don't know if I'm right, but are eloteros in there a lot?
Eloteros, yeah, there's a lot of that. A lot of references to
con todo or what?
Yeah, always con todo. Yeah, sure. Gotta have all of it.
See, but we don't have that stuff around here.
On the cob, right?
Yeah, oh man, and it's got cheese and butter and all this other stuff. Oh my god, it's probably lucky that I don't have it around here because I would eat it all the time.
All the time.
Yeah, it's not. I can't do that at my age anymore. I can't do that. Oh my god. Now. I look at your work, and the first thing I want to see is like a 100-page graphic novel from you because your style is so good. It's colorful. It's really well done. Who are your inspirations?
Ooh, man. Yeah, I mean, right off the top, Jillian Tamaki.
Yep.
Yeah, just an amazing storyteller, illustrator, cartoonist.
Oh, man.
Person, just all of it. Yeah, I've always looked up to Jillian. I think in terms of, you know, storytelling, actually, you know, what comes to mind is like from an illustration standpoint is someone that's not necessarily a cartoonist or a comic book.
Yep.
Wouldn't necessarily be considered a cartoonist or a comic book artist, but Luis Jimenez, who's from El Paso. Yeah, so just this like, exaggerated, really dynamic, illustrated sort of like way of drawing.
Zeke, we're all up. I got to stop you. We're completely out of time. We could talk for another hour. Okay. Give out your website again.
Okay, so my website is zpvisual.com, zpvisual.com.
It's been a pleasure talking to you. My guest tonight is artist, cartoonist, illustrator, Zeke Pena. Watch for this giant, like, mega-sized graphic novel that's going to be coming out.
Yeah, hopefully forthcoming.
I hope so. Zeke, it's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me, Mark.
You listen to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.